All right, folks, welcome back to the episode you guys have been waiting for. I am very ecstatic about having this episode because it's the first time I personally have been back to the theater since February of this year, and it is freaking September now. We're talking Tenet today. Are you guys excited? Josh, I know you've been dying to have this film come out.
Yo, everybody who's listened to a single episode of the podcast, it doesn't matter when, knows that I've been excited for this because I've probably mentioned Tenet like every single episode since January or probably even before that. So when it was one of the films that got pushed, even though it was only a little, I was like freaking out, getting super sad, thinking maybe it's going to get pushed all the way to 2021. But it's here. It's big. Big movies are back. Like, I was so pumped and ready to go see this, man.
Big movies are back. Rumor has it. What about you, Vince? Were you pretty pumped? Did you... You went to the drive-thru, didn't you? Or how did you view this movie?
I did go to the drive-thru, and I got a story to tell when we're ready for it.
Woo! I'm ready. Do you want to talk about it now, or you want to save it for a minute?
Let's save it. Let's go through what we watched before, and then I'll tell you a tale. I'll weave you a story. It's just my experience. Here's a hint. My experience at Tenet was the most 2020 movie theater experience you can think of. Just everything that could go wrong went wrong.
Oh man.
Well, luckily no COVID involved, but don't see Tenet in the drive-thru. I'll just leave it at that for now. Don't see Tenet in the drive-thru theater.
Let's get into this a little bit. Vince or Josh, who wants to go first? What do y'all been watching this week? Let's go with Josh.
Let's see. I'm trying to remember. I don't remember if I told you guys that I finished up Gravity Falls. If I did tell you that, I'll tell you it again because it was really good. And Vince has been sending me a lot of cool, like, other rabbit holes to dive down for Gravity Falls related material. So that's super fun. And besides that, I've been watching a little bit of the new season of The Twilight Zone that came out. It's a little of that. I haven't started, but I want to start the new Netflix series Away with Hilary Swank. That looks good. So I'm going to probably be doing that soon. And besides that, honestly, I don't remember. I don't think I've been watching much. I've definitely been doing a lot of work and a lot of school. So I've been watching a little less. But yeah, that was me. Super chill this week. Nothing crazy. What about you, Vince?
Nice. I wrapped up Umbrella Academy. Finished up season 2. It's good. I really enjoyed it. I think the first season, personally, I preferred the first season story that they told over the second season, but it's still just as fun. It's still really fun. And then I started on HBO, the new show Raised by Wolves just came out.
Oh,
It's Ridley Scott's TV show. And if you're a fan of the Alien series, or even more, if you're a fan of the Prometheus and Alien Covenant series that you are, Casey, I think you're going to dig this show. Because it's slow. It's a slow drama with big moments, but it's more the ideas as it's exploring and the world building that it's doing. It's not... I mean, it's big and it's flashy, but it's not like big action pieces after action piece, you know, and it's definitely not a comedy by any means. It introduces this idea of an atheist. So it's in the future, and basically Earth has fallen apart in this battle between an atheist army versus a religious army. And it reminds me a lot of kind of a sci-fi version of like the Black Ages, you know, lots of symbolism and armor that, like, futuristic armor that kind of looks similar to knight armor from back then. And then it explores this idea of these two androids, these two robots that are trying to raise children as atheists with no religious beliefs on this, like, marooned planet. And then the religious people show up, and I wouldn't say it's like anti-religious or anti-atheist by any means. It just like really explores this idea of, I mean, I'm only one or two episodes in. This is kind of what I've got through the first couple episodes. I think there's 5 episodes out now, but it's visually a ride, and it just, I don't think it really is a part of the Alien franchise at all, but like it fits in there perfectly. Like the androids, the way that they act and the way that they look, like the insides when they get cut open look exactly like the androids that are in the Alien movies, you know? So it's kind of like a part, but not officially a part of that universe, it feels like to me. And it's good. I'm really liking it. Like I said, it's slow burn, but it's interesting. It's really, really interesting.
Well, you've got me intrigued. I'm not going to lie, because I've actually been having this big internal argument, like whether or not to like get it for a month and binge watch this series, if it's like going to be worth it. Because I just don't want to be disappointed, like being honest. Like, I love the guy who plays the lead character, who's like Ragnar Lothbrok, right? I just forgot his name all of a sudden. And then I like the idea of like the war, kind of like I read a little bit about it. I was like, this could be really good, but what if it's complete crap? If the first two episodes are good, usually the whole series is good. Yeah, fingers are crossed. But like, think about like with C, right? Those first two episodes were both so visually stunning, such an interesting story that like it hooked me for the whole season. And that was all. I don't even care that there were a couple of things where I was like, eh, this wasn't my favorite, but I loved the series because of the visual beauty that it was.
Yeah. And this definitely kind of like, well, C is, I think, more visually impressive because it like takes place up in those beautiful mountaintops, you know?
Yeah.
And it just has some really cool set pieces. This Raised by Wolves definitely has some interesting, because they're on this like alien planet, you know, and there's definitely some interesting landscape shots, like really pretty interesting landscape shots. And the guy who plays Ragnar does a really good job, and he isn't just playing Ragnar again. And I was really happy that he's actually playing a different character. He's not doing the same voice that he did in Warcraft and in Vikings. He actually has like an American accent, because I really like that actor too. I wanted him to be successful, and I dig him in this. He's good. So far, he's good.
Dude, that guy is like the ultimate minimalist, to be super honest with you. Like, he lives in a trailer. He has some horses. He's an Australian cowboy, essentially.
Oh, that's awesome.
Who like made it big as an underwear model, then moved on to like the big screen, essentially. So I'm a fan of his. So
he's most like, isn't that what? Oh my gosh, I just spaced his name. Marky Mark. Isn't that what Marky Mark did? Wasn't he like an underwear model, and then he did his Funky Bunch, and then he became a movie star?
Yeah, Calvin Klein for both of them, to be honest with you. I'm sad that I know about this underwear modeling business so much. It's like, I know all the underwear models. John Hamm was not one of them, guys. Inside joke, everyone. Anyhow, like, I actually haven't been watching that much this week, to be super honest with you. I've kind of like sucked at watching anything. In ways, that's not a bad thing, but in other ways, I feel like I've been in the dark. We watched It Chapter 1 yesterday.
Love it.
To get back into the horror film season, which has been super exciting, and I am beyond stoked. And then also, I've been watching just what my wife has been watching. We watched New Girl. We watched some of the old Office. And then I watched some more of The Legend of Korra, actually. I have to finish it in a week because I have somebody scheduled to come and be on a podcast with me for The Legend of Korra to do that follow-up to the Avatar series. So I don't know. I need to like kick it in gear. But anyhow, let's get into this movie. So folks, like, Tenet is a new film. Some of you may not have ventured out to the theater yet. This is full of spoilers. I just want to be aware of that. Like, from now going forward, anything we talk about,
we can get on the movie info first, right? So the people seen it,
yeah, we'll just be aware, like, if we leak in a spoiler here and there, like, sorry, this is a brand new movie. But yeah, Josh, you got some information for us, don't you? Do you want to go ahead and give us a run through?
Yeah, for sure. So Tenet, directed by the one, the only Christopher Nolan. My hero. Directed by Christopher Nolan, produced by him and his wife Emma Thomas, written by Christopher Nolan, starring John David Washington as the protagonist, Robert Pattinson as Neil, Elizabeth Debicki, Dimple Kapadia, Michael Caine, and Kenneth Branagh. Music by Ludwig Göransson. Cinematography by Hoyt van Hoytema. Produced by Warner Bros. And Syncopy. It was released August 22nd in the UK, while being released to other parts of the world shortly afterwards, specifically September 3rd in the United States. It's 2.5 hours. The budget was $200 million, and to date, so obviously still in theaters, it has grossed a total of $152.3 million per Wikipedia.
It's almost made us money back, even during COVID.
Well, so that was the budget for filming so far. However, they have spent quite a large sum on the marketing for the movie. And so what I read an article online earlier today that says that to break even, they would need to hit $400 million to like actually break even with all of the marketing and everything that went into it. So I think it'll make it there. I think it'll just be sort of more like a slow burn with, you know, less people going out to the theaters and just all that kind of thing. But I think it'll make it there. It's just kind of, you'll always have to, whenever we get to the future and we look back and see how much money's different movies make, you'll always have to put those end of 2021s with a little asterisk, you know?
I think I heard also that they're planning on leaving it in theaters for a longer period of time than normal.
Probably, yeah.
So it'll probably have pretty long legs here. So.
That would make sense, especially because, like, well, like, for instance, so, like, going back to when I bought my movie ticket that I brought up earlier, straight up, like, I saw that there was, like, four other seats that were sold, and I was like, cool, like, this will be a pretty empty theater overall because there are three to choose from, and straight up, like, those people didn't even show up. It was just me. And so, like, people are buying tickets and not going to the theater, which I can understand and be reasonable with. But, like, I think they're smart if they can do a long of this to ensure that they make their money back, if that makes sense. Because this is a unique time to release movies. And, like, I'm curious about your experience going to the drive-through now, because I want to know how people are going to have to be experiencing it. Like, versus, like, I go in there and the theater's, like, the movie is tuned for the theater, right? Whereas where you went, your car or whatever the sound came through is not tuned for this type of film.
This was the single worst movie experience I've ever had in my entire life. And I don't think I will ever have a worse experience.
Really?
Where do I even start? So, I thought this was a great idea. Tenet's coming out. I can go to the drive-in movie. I won't have to worry about getting COVID. I can sit in my car. I can watch it. It'll be great. So we go to the movie. We pull up to the drive-in. We back up the car. We get a great seat great spot right in the middle, right? Yeah. Pop up the back, set our lawn chairs out, and then two other trucks come and park on both our left side and our right side, and they blast their volume up super loud. So the first at least 30 minutes of this movie, I cannot understand anything they're saying because there's this echo between the two between the two trucks with their blasting sound at different distances and my volume behind me. It's just reverberating and bouncing off of walls and like just almost can't understand anything anyone's saying.
Not to interrupt what you're saying, mm-hmm. but I not to like throw nitpicks in too early, but I was in the theater and I had a hard time understanding what everyone was saying for the first 30 minutes too. That's been like one of the film's biggest criticisms is like, everyone's like, yes, we get it. It's like a world movie. They go all over the world, but these accents are all over the place, man. And just like,
yeah. You're no, not the first person I've heard say that either. I think everybody that I know that has seen it has said that same thing. Like, I wish there was subtitles during the movie. Like one of my friends literally said, I wish there were subtitles during this movie.
Yeah, and I never thought I'd say that. I kind of agreed because I was like, I couldn't understand anything, and I could imagine with those trucks and just everything bouncing everywhere that it was even worse.
It was so bad. And so we were trying everything. You know, we got inside the car. I went with my sister and my brother-in-law, and so we decided, oh, we'll just get into the car, and then that way the sound will be better. So we crawl into the car. That fixed the sound for the most part, what we could hear. But my car is too small to fit three people, and the position of my car made it so where I was laying down, a third of the screen was being cut off. So I laid there for 15 minutes trying to enjoy this movie, trying to understand the things that they're saying, only being able to see two-thirds of the theater or of the screen before finally I decided, this sucks, and I'm going to figure this out. And so I crawled back out of my car. I sat around the side and thought, hey, maybe if I can only hear one truck's volume, I'll be able to understand stuff. No, that didn't work either. So about 45 minutes to an hour into the movie, we decide, let's just flip the car around and sit in the seats like regular. And that solved the problem. We could hear, we could see. And then it got super hot inside the car. And so we had to unroll our windows. So anyway, my point being is this is a complex movie with very complex ideas and thoughts. And if you can't understand the first, if you can't hear what they're saying and the explanation of what's going on for the first hour of the movie, it makes the second hour of the movie, hour and a half or whatever, very confusing. And I was very lost through the whole thing. And I'll be 100% honest with you guys. I listened on my drive back up here because I was down south. I listened to a 15-minute explanation of the movie, and I didn't get a single thing that they explained in the movie. So I'm sorry in advance that you guys will be explaining a lot of what took place throughout this movie that I believe was a very visually entertaining cinematic experience with stuff that I've never seen before. And I can't wait to actually see it in a way that it was meant to be seen, whether that be hopefully in a big theater or maybe just at home where I can actually see it and control the stuff going on around me. And I don't have to worry about cars driving in and headlights turning on and radios going off and people walking around the parking lot. And just to make things just even worse, the popcorn I bought that I was so excited to eat, just movie theater popcorn. I walked into the food thing, the like little shop, and the popcorn was sitting on a shelf with saran wrap over the top and was stale and just gross. And it was just the worst experience I've ever had.
No.
So Tenet looked cool.
That makes me very sad, Vince. I'm not going to lie to you.
Yeah, I'm really disappointed, and I wish I would have done what you did and kind of watched those online ticket sales and then jumped in a small theater with very few people. And I honestly might end up doing that in the next couple of weeks just so I can really see it, actually see it this time around, you know. And I have the basic idea of what's going on in the movie, and so I think this movie kind of requires a second viewing to really understand it, right? So, you know. It is what it is.
The second viewing makes it better. I definitely saw it for the second time today. I went to go see it again, just like to sort of have a refresher, because the first time I saw it was like the day after it came out. So like the second day that it was here in the U.S. And so then I wanted to go see it again, like for a refresher. And I will say that it was definitely like number one, because there was less people in the theater this time. Number two, because sort of already knew what was going on, and so there was like other things that like when you watch it back, you're like, whoa, like this thing that you wouldn't have known about before. But like since you saw it again, like you knew, like it was super cool. So hopefully you can do that. I don't know how the theaters will look like around where you live, but I went today for like a matinee at like 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and there was three other like I just went by myself, but there was just like three other like couples like in the whole theater. So
that's really nice.
Maybe next Saturday, if you're not busy, you can catch one of those ones.
Yeah,
or just go during work, you know. I won't tell Matt.
Yeah, I'm the only one in the theater. I could just like Slack from my cell phone, right?
There you go.
I've done that before.
What about you guys? Did you love it, Josh? With all the hype that you had for it, did it pay off? Did you love it as much as you thought it would?
Upon the first viewing, I didn't think that I loved it as much as I thought it would, as far as like a Christopher Nolan movie goes. But there was also a lot that I didn't really. There was still a lot that I didn't understand and stuff that I was like trying to see and find out what's going on. But like upon and after I saw it and I was like looking up stuff and I understood it, I liked it a little more. And I saw it this second time and I was just like, yes, like this is like, I don't even care if I like overhype it to, like, it was mind blowing. Like this was like an entire, not in, I did read that there has been like a movie that's done this in like a similar ish way before, but this is like an entirely basically unique experience and a huge blockbuster spy thriller with physics, like time travel backwards, and just like the most ridiculous action, because it's using effects and like stuff that you haven't seen before with people going forwards and backwards at the same, and just like the stuff is crazy. And like, as you understand it and all these different things, like it was insane and it was so fun to watch and just be really treated to a unique but huge movie experience. Not to mention, and I know that we'll get into this, the practical effects that Christopher Nolan loves to put into the movies. You know, if you've been listening here, we talked about The Dark Knight. We talked about Terminator 2 with those practical effects. We love the practical effects here. And so just to go and look up after how they did all their stuff and how much of it was practical, just on camera and not effects, it was ridiculous to read. So like, not to spoil if anyone like already has this in their notes, one of the top like IMDb trivia things is that even though obviously there were like visual effects used for parts of this movie, there was not a single green screen used for the entire production of this movie. I like love that is so amazing. Much. That is so cool. And I just love that.
They crashed an airplane into a building.
They really did it. I thought there was no way. I thought they'd be like a scale model or something like that. And they thought about doing that. But then they just freaking did it, man. They're like, we'll just buy this plane and crash it into this building, okay? Like, screw everything. We're going to do it.
It's so crazy. That's what I love the most about Christopher Nolan. Yeah. That's what I love about the most about Christopher Nolan is just he understands that there's nothing like actually seeing something happen versus something that's digitally created. I freaking love him for that.
Like John David Washington. So obviously, like, I knew like a little bit about him, but he played like football and stuff in college and he was very athletic. But even him being as athletic as he was, he decided to sort of do all of his like own stunts for the movie and everything, and all of like the fighting scenes, like he learned and did the choreography with like the other person who's going to be doing it with him. And he said that like after filming and stuff, he was like sore like forever just because of how incredibly physically demanding it was. And it was just him doing it all, because like when you have a stunt double, you can still do it because there's a lot of action and moving, but you have to like film a little different just to make sure that nothing sees or do like touch-ups. And he's like, no, I'm just gonna do it. So they're freaking,
heck yeah.
They closed down 5 miles of a highway in the middle of Estonia, and they're driving these like fire trucks down, and he's on the top of them on the ladder. Like, it's ridiculous, man. It's freaking insane.
Oh, so cool. Casey, did you like it?
I actually really enjoyed this one, to be really honest with you. I thought it was incredibly well thought out. Like, I'm not much of like an understander of physics and the deep sciences, as I would call them. But I love this movie, and like, I'm not going to lie to you, I figured the bulk of it out halfway through. I was like, boom. Well, especially bringing up that part where they're going down the road, right? And I was like, I was sitting there and I was like, the window's broken, but something hasn't happened yet. And so like, there's like this time shift type thing. Maybe I misinterpreted that, but also I called that freaking what's his name was from a different timeline, that he was the actual Robert Pattinson. Neil's character is like a time jumper type thing, like that's what he does. Like, I was like, nope, this guy is totally from the future. He knows everything, especially like that fighting sequence right there where they go in and like he rips off the helmet and lets it go, type thing.
The one in the airport.
Yeah, the one where they crash the airplane, right, where they come out of the room and there's the guys that run down the hallway, right? Mm-hmm. It's when they go back in and it's John David Washington's character, like he's the protagonist, right? And right. I was like, oh, that's totally one of the two of them. Like, I was like, that's got to be one of the two of them, because like there's no way he just let somebody go unless it was someone important to this movie. And like, as you go on, like the kingpin from India, the arms dealer from India, nope, she doesn't do this type of thing. Like, he wouldn't let go like the bad guy, because even if, for instance, maybe he was a bad guy himself, there was just so many things that I was like, this guy is like, he's playing a part and he's been sent to take care of the work for this. And then I love this movie. Like, I wanted more of this movie. At the end of the movie, I was like, I could stay and watch this again. Like, nobody else is coming to the theater today. I could just watch this again. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I forecasted incorrectly, and maybe I saw some things that maybe Josh, because you've watched it now twice, saw it differently. But I don't know. Like, I love the first part when they're in the opera house. That was freaking dope. Like, that was rad.
I missed almost all of that opera house because of moving around, just trying to get in positions, moving chairs, getting in and out of cars. I almost missed the entire thing. And that's the thing, is I had the exact opposite experience as you, Casey, because I didn't know what was going on half the time. It was just events happening and me trying to keep up with the events as they happen. So I didn't know any of the locations they were in. So when they fought themselves in the airport there, and it was like the SWAT guys, and then they go back to the airport. They mention, you know, we got to go back to Oslo, I think. Is that where it is? Mm-hmm. I didn't realize that Oslo was where they were in the first place. So when they showed up back there, my mind was just like, whoa, that's the same guys. Because I didn't realize that's where they're going back to. I couldn't put those bits together because everything was so broken apart. But it made those moments of like the time travel ideas, without really being able to keep up, it made those moments of not being able to guess how things are going to happen that much more powerful and like impressive to me, if that makes sense at all. Like, because I just did not even think about those guys again after they left. I didn't have time to think about it. I was just trying to keep up. And it made that fight scene both times so much fun for me to watch. So much fun for me to watch.
Well, it's weird seeing it from the perspective of the original fight scene, right? Where it's kind of weird and kind of feels clunky, right? And then seeing it from like his second point of view, when he's going through and being the one pushing and fighting himself.
That's the first time that you really see like a person as being inverted in the movie, right? Like you saw like the bullet and like the things like that, whatever. Like you didn't really see like a person being inverted until that moment. And so like the fight scene and them doing weird stuff, which wouldn't normally be like allowed under the laws of physics. Like when he does like that freaking, I don't even know what it's called, just like the super slam, like backbreaker thing. But the first time you watch it, like it doesn't make any sense because he's just sitting there. And then all of a sudden it's like, whoop, like he flies from the ground, like up or something like that. And it's just, it's so insane, man.
It makes everything look so unnatural, but I haven't ever seen anything like it before. Like everything inverted. It's just everything just feels weird. And isn't that how they describe it too? It's just like,
yeah,
everything is gonna feel weird while you're in there. And it's just weird to watch. Everything feels weird to see, and I loved it. I've never seen a time travel movie do it like this, and it's just so unique and cool.
I loved it. It felt like a good loop, right? Like you're not like out of this loop, right? You're in the correct loop the whole time. I don't know, because there's some time travel movies where you're just kind of like, this is wrong, like you went too far, and this one like felt like you were just kind of in a nice enclosed loop, and like it could change, but it was like a safe space for me. I don't know, maybe I'm wrong. But then like I just want to call out like the cool way they showed the underground and how it was connected and stuff like that, like all these like arms dealers and like the art and like everything in that underground world seems to be connected in some way or another, because you know they all know each other in some way or another, and they operate as a super rich together, I guess, in that way. I don't know, I liked the connection with the underground. It almost felt John Wick like they kind of had some sort of code going on, like there was a continental in this universe somewhere. I don't know.
So here's like one of like the coolest things for me, right? Like when we're talking about this world of Tenet and the inversion and the time traveling. So they're building this machine, like the algorithm and everything like that in the future, blah, blah, blah. And they send it back to the past. When he was discussing inversion in the early parts of the movie with the Indian arms dealer, I forget her name, but when he's like discussing it with her, Priya. And you're sort of learning a little bit more about like everything that's going down. This was one of the coolest parts to me, is something that it's probably been done before for sure. But like, I was just like, whoa, this is so crazy, because they're like doing all of this stuff and they're working with the future. And he's like, but how do you talk with people in the future? And she's like, what do you think? Like everything that we do now, emails, texts, everything, like you think it just doesn't exist in the future? It's there. Like, it gets there, and you're just like, whoa, like that's totally true. And so then like when they're planning their heist, they're like, he's like, yo, we got to do this all like just us talking. We can't put anything into the future, otherwise there's going to be someone come back to foil it. Like we got to do it like that. And that was so cool and interesting to think about. And then later on they were talking about how the future communicated with the present, she was like, oh, I don't know. But then later on, we found like that she did know. And it was that they would like send something back in time. Like they would invert it like all the way back to where they were. Right. And they would have the containers that they would put the algorithm in or whatever. And they would have like locations for a place to bury it. And they would like tell them. So they would like put like the location on it and bury it somewhere. But the people in the present would like also say like, hey, like, when you're in the future, you can invert another object, but put it here, like in a certain place. So then they would go to another place in the present. So then even though it was much harder than, you know, the present communicating with the future could still communicate with the, like, it was crazy. Like that was one I didn't get until like the second game, but it was super cool too.
Yeah. So, I don't know. That part still is a little cloudy to me. So maybe I just will have to pay attention more and then watch it again. Vince, let's go.
Yeah.
You know, it's like one of those things where what I like about Nolan films, and I guess like, Josh, I think you told me about this once, and correct me if I'm like wrong, but like Christopher Nolan will like enroll in a class and do his research, right? Like he won't just like write a movie. He will study the science behind it, right? And then he will go in and create the movie, create the practical effects off of what he understands of the subject. And so I think that's super interesting because you know that this isn't so far-fetched because Nolan's done his research and done his stuff. Right, Josh? Is that kind of what he does, or am I right in left wing here?
No, right, definitely. Like for Interstellar, he definitely had – he worked with the same guy that he worked with for Interstellar because Interstellar was praised as obviously until the very end when he goes into the black hole as being extremely, extremely like scientifically accurate, you know, like with everything that they talk about and the way that the wormholes work and everything like that, it was the same. So this film was not meant to be like as scientific accurate, like the idea of entropy, like all objects like descending into chaos and like everything like that is a real thing. But like the idea that you could reverse the entropy of an object is obviously not something that's like really like based in science, you know, but just yeah, like that the science isn't just like freaking horse shit, you know, like just random crap. Like he did sit down. It's a physicist. His name is Kip Thorne, who he worked with on Interstellar. He sat down with this, went through the script with him so that they could like piece out things and actually make them like more accurate than not, I guess is what you could say. So that like, obviously, this movie's not like scientifically accurate. Like, sorry to burst your bubble. You probably, who knows, maybe the government or the underground's keeping it a secret from us, but you probably can't go invert it and go back and watch your high school prom or something like that. I don't know what you do with it, but try to keep the ideas and the concepts that were explained like as accurate as possible.
Yeah. And speaking of Nolan doing his homework, like, you got to chart this thing out on a map. You know, it's like that Charlie Day meme when he's got Pepe Sylvia in the middle and strings are tied everywhere. Cause like people are going back and forth in time. There's multiple versions of, there's multiple versions of like a character going on. Like I said, I listened to that breakdown on the way out here and just Neil, that one character alone, they mentioned that he has like six different versions of himself during one time period, if you do the math of him going forward and back and forward and back and forward and back, like I can just imagine Nolan being like, okay, so he moved here and then he moved here and then he moved here, you know, and it's just like drawn out. And then he has to do that for every one of the characters. And then isn't there a rule, remind me if I'm wrong, isn't there a rule that you're not allowed to see yourself or like something will go wrong?
You can't. So you're not supposed to like interact in a way that would like influence your past self or something. That's just like one of those like basic time travel rules, right? But there was like a rule that they specifically mentioned that you can't touch. Like if your molecules touch their molecules, there was no other explanation given other than annihilation.
Who knows?
Yeah.
So that's why he had to like wear the big old like crazy suit when he went back and then he's fighting himself. So
is that why they also like highlighted his hands in the first fight sequence? And then you look back at it and it highlights the other guy's hands where they're all covered. Like they show that as a thing that you kind of like, it weirdly focuses on that for just a blip of a second, but it's there. So I don't know, like the weird things they do in this, like it's pretty cool. Yeah, no, I'm not saying that like that time travel is real, right? But I'm like saying like
we can hope.
Nolan has a good anchor, right, in what he does, and I don't feel like it's kind of like Jupiter Uprising where it's just you know, garbage. So it's one of those things. So
yeah, all that stuff. Like I always love like how even like the weirdest things that you think would be normal, like also go backwards in time with them. Like when he. The first time I just didn't even notice this, even though I did know, because it took me probably a little longer than Casey, but like when they were getting on the thing back to Oslo, that was when I was like, oh, like he's going to go back and find himself. This is going to be crazy. Like the thing I didn't notice the first time that I did like this time is when he had like the bruise on his arm. It was from when his like past self had like shoved like the gun like into his arm when he was trying to find out who he was. And like as they got closer, it got worse. Like you could see him like being like that, and then it started bleeding like right as they got there, because
that's
when he
really
flew
cool.
inside was when the dude was like jamming it in there, everything like that.
That's really cool.
The protagonist, he's a super cool guy, but he is definitely a freaking brutal CIA agent. Like the way he talks, all the stuff he does, like when he's in India before he knows that it's her operation, and he's talking to that guy. And he's like, you're an arms dealer. This might be the easiest trigger I have to pull or whatever. And then he's like, I'm not that guy. And I'm not the guy who helps. He's like, but I'm the guy that people talk to. And you're just like, dude, yeah. Like, okay, man. All right. So like, I loved him. And I thought he was the perfect John David Washington. I thought he was the perfect choice for this protagonist character, because even though he was the protagonist of the movie and he was like the star, I think he was like just mysterious enough and low key enough that Christopher Nolan said he always wanted it this way, that even though he wanted a good actor like John David Washington, he said he wanted him to be like a little more low key and then to be surrounded with like the other like little like kind of not co, but like sort of like sub co-stars, you know, like the supporting actors, right? To be like big name people like Robert Pattinson and Elizabeth Debicki and stuff. So I don't know. I thought it was super cool. Speaking of that, like who... We haven't really done this one for a while, but we used to a lot. Who stood out for you guys in this movie as far as acting performances, acting or actresses? Casey, it looks like
you got one. I'm so ready. I actually got two. Can I bring up these two?
Do it.
Okay. So it's the husband and wife. It's Andre and Andre and Kat. Like those two are great. Like I like John David Washington, wonderful, great job. Like he stood out. Robert Pattinson, excellent. But like I love the actor who plays Andre. Like he's in Harry Potter, he's in Murder on the Orient Express, you know, he's in a couple of these movies, and he's also in a lot of other random stuff. But he just did so good. This is an Irishman, like, who is acting like a freaking Russian brute. And it's amazing. He did so good. And then Elizabeth Debicki, like her she's just so good at expressing and displaying, and like I just loved her acting. Like she stood like as somebody who was afraid of her husband but also had her own power in a way and knew that she could escape and do these things, but also the fear of what if I escape, do I lose my son? Like you felt the emotional turmoil she was in, if that makes sense. That's how I felt, at least. And like that's why I paid so much attention to them. I just thought they were so good. Like really, that was me. I thought the two of them, like as a companionship, did good, and how they played on the other actors was great as well. Like I feel like the other actors were important, but these two were so central to the story, especially when you find out more as it's unraveling, when she like talks about going back and seeing the lady jump off the boat and how she wanted to be that woman. She stepped up and became that woman when she realized it actually was her, type thing. And it's such a cool thing. Like that's me.
That's the beautiful part of this story, I really thought, and she talked about it in a couple interviews, is that amidst this incredible, like, mind-bending, visually, like, exploding story, you have this incredibly real and, like, raw human experience of this wife who is, like, being blackmailed and honestly, like tortured and being beaten by her husband, who just, it's her story of... through these, obviously, for this story, extreme circumstances, this incredibly human story of finding her escape and her true freedom from this horrible thing that's keeping her down. I agree. She was incredible. And by the way, like, you could definitely see this. They didn't do anything to hide it in the movie. Elizabeth Debicki, she is 6'3", and John David Washington is 5'9". And you could tell, like, a couple, especially with her wearing heels, like, you could tell a couple parts of the movie. I was like, whoa, they're way different height-wise. So that was cool. I got a, just like, the reason I asked that question is because I did love everyone. But, dude, I don't know what it is, man. Robert Pattinson in this movie, dude, he just freaking killed it for me. I loved him so much in this movie. Neil was one of my favorite characters, and Robert Pattinson just brought that guy to life. There was so much that we found out at the end of the movie that he knew, and you could see, like, so subtle things, like, on a second viewing, like, of him, like, knowing about things that were happening that didn't happen before. And, like, so many crazy things happened with Neil, and, like, the good friend he was, and, like, everything that he did to make this happen, but without, like, stealing the show too much. Like, Robert Pattinson, he was funny, he was perfect, he was, oh gosh, like, he, for me, like, took this movie to another level. Like, I thought that he did incredible. I'm looking forward to him in the Batman. Like, I'm down for anything Robert Pattinson is doing, you know. I think he's gone past living in a Twilight world, as they say in this movie. So.
Well, I want to bring that up with you. Like, Robert Pattinson can no longer just be looked at as a vampire. And, like, for so many actors, like, they have to get over this hurdle of their initial success and why people know them, right? Like, you're just famous because of this. And that's, like, really hard to break, especially a film that was as big as the Twilight saga, like a film series, right? Like, he's broken out of it. He's had so many good roles, and he's done other things that now he's able to really step out and be like, watch me, watch what I can do. Like, stop. I don't know the vampire's name. Stop calling me the vampire. Right. Like, stop it. And so he's doing so good.
I
know it, good.
But I don't want to say it, 'cause it'll seem like I've been like,
Edward.
Edward. And, like, to be honest, I think he's been out of that for quite some time, but it hasn't been with super huge production things. So for people, you know, because not everyone's seen The Lighthouse, right? Everyone's seen these other amazing things he's been in. So for him to be, like, in back-to-back years, going to be starring in Tenet, Christopher Nolan's huge new movie, and do amazing, and then The Batman, which we're hoping is going to be as sort of amazing as it's looking, like, hopefully, like, to the world, he'll have surpassed that. Sorry, Vince, I didn't
no, you're good.
Kind of skip past who do you think stood out in this movie.
I think I just have two things to add to what you guys said. Number one, what's his name? Neil? Robert Pattinson. Very watchable, very charming, very interesting the way he moves and the way he talks and the way he, like, delivers lines. Really great. And I'm with you, Casey. I wouldn't say that he's my favorite character, but I love how Christopher Nolan made the Russian bad guy, the husband, I don't know his name. I loved Andre. I loved the unique character trait that he gave him with the obsession with his heart rate on his watch all the time. And, like, everything he was doing was, like, you know, he yelled at his wife and then he'd look and he'd be like, oh, okay, heart rate's at 80 beats per minute or whatever, you know? Or, like, to John David Washington, to the protagonist, he's like, you got my heart rate up to this high. No one's ever done that before. You know, kudos to you. And I don't know if that stood out to me because of, with quarantine going on, how much I've gotten into, like, running and fitness and stuff. And I bought myself an Apple Watch. And I, like, that's been me for the past couple of months, is, like, everything I do, I'm like, oh, I got to track my steps. I got to make sure I'm closing my circles. I got to make sure I get out and do my run. You know, even the other night I was, like, looking at my heart rate, 'cause I was curious what my resting heart rate would be. And so it's like that little character trait just, like, related to me so much, and it was just this stupid little thing that didn't really matter for the character that made him just a little bit more realistic to me, you know, that he would have this weird little tick, this weird little quirk. I don't know, I thought it was really cool. But I'm with you guys, all those actors, all three of them, standout characters. John David Washington, props for doing all your own stunts, like you were saying, Josh, like, standout cast all the way around. Even down to Aaron Taylor Johnson shows up as Ives, the military guy. We haven't seen him, or at least I haven't seen him. I think he was in Godzilla and in, like, Avengers Age of Ultron were, like, the last two movies I saw him in, and then he just kind of has vanished. He shows up in this, and I was like, I recognize him, but I don't know who he is. And he just plays great. He just does great as this like military tactician, or, you know, just. And it's great to see Michael Caine again. Michael Caine, always a delight, you know. The whole cast is just absolutely fantastic.
Has Michael Caine been in pretty much every single one of Christopher Nolan's films?
I don't think he was in Memento, or the one he did before Memento. But he would have been in all three Dark Knights.
This is the eighth film by Christopher Nolan to feature Michael Caine, including his voice cameo in Dunkirk. Because I guess he wasn't in the film itself, but he had a voice cameo. So, do you guys, I have some fun facts, and I have like about a million that I could say. So, like, for anyone who's seen this movie, you should just go onto IMDb trivia and read like every single one of the facts, because they're all incredible. But I did have a few that I just wanted to bring up to talk about really cool, if that's all right.
Of course.
So the first one I want to talk about was the something that I didn't know about. It's called the Seder Square. Uh-huh. It's basically like, it's a Latin palindrome thing. Like, I don't know if you saw this when like looking up stuff about the movie. Basically what it is like, there's like a slab, and it's just like a 5x5 like thing of letters, right? And no matter which way you turn it, just because of the way that the letters work out, it will always like going left to right or top to bottom or whatever, it will always have the same five words. It'll have Seder, Arepo, Tenet, Opera, and Rotas.
Yeah, I'm looking at that right now. That's super cool.
And it's super cool because all of those things, you know, show up in the movie. Obviously, the opera from the beginning, and they mention it throughout. Rotas is the name of one of the, like, the companies. I think it's the company that does security for the Freeport or whatever it's called. Uh-huh. Tenet, obviously, the title for the movie. Arepo was the art guy from, like, that we never met him, but they would talk about him with the whole, the fake thing that happened. And then Sator, yep, is, what's his name's last name? Andre Sator is the Russian guy, right? And so, like, it's really crazy, like, with the whole idea of it, like, being inversion and just, like, this thing that any way you turn it, it will always say those same things. Like, I just thought it was really cool, and I didn't actually see that until today. And it's just like a really cool like side thing that they included in the movie to feature along with those things.
That's cool. No, that's a really cool like thing, right? Like, I love that.
Dude, it's like, if you haven't seen this but you've seen Tenet, look up the Seder Square. So Sator Square. Pretty freaking awesome. So check that out. And then another like quick thing just to go with like that whole backwards forwards thing in the final like big fight battle thing, right? Both the red team and the blue team, one of them's going forward, one of them's going backwards through time. They both have 10 minutes, right? You put 10 forward and backwards next to each other, Tenet, like, whoosh, again. Like,
yeah,
crazy.
In the preview, they actually like spin Tenet, right? The word Tenet, so you can see that, right? It says the same thing both that times. It's like, good call there.
But like the, yeah, so for me, like, I didn't think about like the 10 minutes as far as like how it's spelled, like forward and backwards with them doing that mission. And I was like, dude, every single time, like, another level, extra freaking stuff. One of the coolest things I thought is that Christopher Nolan really wanted this to be like a worldwide film, because he really wanted it to seem like the entire world really was in danger. So while you had actors who were all over the place, who were playing people from all over the world, who had different accents and all of these things, including Robert Pattinson, which, sorry, quick fun fact in the fun fact, whenever he plays a British person, he doesn't use his regular British voice. He changes his intonation to be different, because then he feels like he can get more in character when he changes the style of British accent he uses, instead of just using like his like own like original like voice, if that makes sense. So
he doesn't just have a Yorkshire accent like Sean.
No, he doesn't
Bean
just have like his like same accent. He changes anytime he plays someone British, he changes the accent up to be different. So I thought it was super cool. Principal photography for this movie took place in 7 countries. Because like we're talking about it and like being all over the place, really wanting to be like a worldwide movie. It took place in Denmark, India, Italy, which is where those films that were supposed to be like outside of Vietnam were actually filled. It was along the Malafi coast. Norway, the UK, the United States, and an extremely large portion of the film was filmed in Estonia. which is where they had like that big, like the car chase sequence and everything like that was filmed in Tallinn. And then they had a few other things that weren't like in Estonia for the movie, but that they had like warehouses there and just like they were able to do a lot of stuff in Estonia. So I thought that
was. Let me see if I can track this down. So the windmills are Denmark, right? Then like the end of the film is done. Well, there's Oslo, right? Oslo, Norway. Then what did they do in the United States?
The United States, they did a lot of, so they did anything that they had to do like on a set, they pretty much did at Warner Brothers Studios. And then also, fun fact for us people who live in Utah here, there is like a deserted like coal mine town or something that's out in the middle of nowhere, California, that had like apartment buildings for people to live, but now it's all like mined out and deserted out in like the middle of nowhere, California. Which is where they filmed. They actually like had a couple of locations for it, but it's the majority of where they filmed that final like action sequence, them going in to get the algorithm. That town is actually called, this like ghost town that exists in California now is actually called Eagle Mountain. So fun.
My hometown. Well, not hometown. My old, where I used to live.
So I thought that was pretty cool. Oh yeah, so they did that there. And just a few other things like that we're able to do in California. The UK, obviously, like when they were doing the London scenes and everything, they were in London. Estonia was a car chase. And I know there was a few other ones, but I'd have to like look further in depth. So super crazy that they did like 7 different countries, just like traveling all over to really give this movie like a worldwide feel. Like I thought.
Yeah, one of the interviews that I listened to with Chris Nolan said that he wanted to... Well, I don't remember if it was specifically Chris Nolan, but he said he wanted to make it feel kind of like a James Bond movie, where James Bond is always like jumping from country to country to different set pieces to set pieces, and this definitely feels like an homage to a James Bond spy thriller.
For sure. This is the very first movie of Christopher Nolan since The Prestige that Hans Zimmer did not do the score for.
Oh.
He's done all of his scores ever since, like everything after The Prestige, he's done the music for. But Hans Zimmer sadly could not take up Christopher Nolan on this one because he was working on another movie. Do you know what movie it is, Vince?
Hans Zimmer, Dune?
Hans Zimmer's doing Dune.
Yeah, that's going to be good. Oh, he needs
to. So even though I was sad, like Hans Zimmer doing Dune is freaking awesome. But I was worried about Ludwig Göransson because he was the guy who did the Black Panther soundtrack. So he was very, very good replacement. And he was who Hans Zimmer recommended to Christopher Nolan to do this film since he couldn't.
That's cool. I thought you were going to say that just Christopher Nolan decided to go with someone else just because. And I was about to be really bummed like that they were like moving apart. But Hans Zimmer on Dune, that's gonna work.
Yeah, that I hadn't seen, like, I just was really busy the day that the trailer came out because we have like a little movie chat at work and Vince or Kate or someone sent it in there, the Dune trailer, and I hadn't seen it. And so I didn't watch it then and I felt sad, but I wasn't so sad because today I went to the movie theater and they played the Dune trailer in the movie theater. And let me tell you, that movie's going to be freaking awesome. Having like that movie theater experience of that sound and that freaking worm monster. Like, I don't know a ton about Dune, but I'm freaking pumped. Like, already.
Can we please watch the old Dune before the new Dune comes out and talk about it?
I wish everyone could see Vince's face right now. He's just like,
I hate that movie. I watched it last year and I couldn't decide if it was like, no, that's not true. They put money into it. You can tell they put money into it, but it's an 80s movie, so it's like it's old and it looks bad and it's corny and it's just like, oh, it's, I just couldn't get into it. I just read the book too. But Casey, if you want to do it, I am down to do it. But I'll do the whole podcast like this.
Well, that's fair. Like, the movie is not the greatest movie, but like, we have to have that comparison. I think it needs to be fresh because this next Dune is going to blow us away. Like, that's all I have to say about it. It's going to hit it out of the park.
Denis Villeneuve, man. You can do no wrong.
Yeah, it came out in the year 1984, so hopefully 1984 wasn't like 1984, according to Apple and this. Apple, pay us. But what else, Josh? What do you got? Do you got any other fun facts?
There's a lot that I could go into, so I probably will just sort of like call it where we have it right now. There was definitely a lot of interesting stuff that happened with casting considerations and everything. Like Robert Pattinson, he met with Christopher Nolan about the movie, and they met for like 3.5 hours when they were first talking about it and the possibility of him being in it. And they were meeting for so long that I guess like Robert Pattinson's like his like blood sugar was dropping or something like that. And he was kind of like getting antsy or something. And then so there was like a chocolate like on Christopher Nolan's desk when they were meeting. And he's like, could I have the chocolate or something? Like just sort of like feeling like a little like down or something like that. And he says that Christopher Nolan ended the meeting right there. And so he was like, I blew it. Like, I freaking blew it, man. Like, I'm not going to be in this freaking Nolan movie because I wanted this chocolate. But obviously, Nolan knew that he was the right part for it. Elizabeth Debicki, Christopher Nolan saw her in Widows, and she was so good in that. She plays an American actress in that. I think I mentioned this before on the podcast. She was so good in that he thought that she was American. So when his wife, who's also the producer, Emma Thomas, suggested her for the role of Kat, he said, no, I want like someone who can do a really good, like who can be strong, like British actress and like really convincing. And then he found out she was Australian because he really thought she was American. And he was like, oh. And then he didn't even want her to audition. He was just like, you can have the part. But then she's like, no, I need to audition for the part. So
that's cool.
There's a lot of cool castings. Like I said, I could go through a million of these facts. If you thought these were good, there's a ton of other really cool ones about like the cinematography. Cause like the cinematographer, sorry, he's done his Nolan's last three films, Hoyt Van Hoytema. He is so good. And obviously to do something like this, just like with these new, they had like specialized IMAX cameras that they did everything on, just like incredible, amazing. Like just go like to IMDb trivia or go on like Wikipedia. IMDb trivia is probably better for this though. And just read all the facts. Cause they're all incredible. And you're going to like, I literally there's 85 facts. And this afternoon, I read every single one of them and they were all super interesting. So I won't go like too far into detail. So just go check those out. There's so many cool things you can learn about this movie. The only thing that I forgot to mention that I actually think is important is when the characters are inverted, there's a short motif that is played frequently throughout the movie. When the characters are inverted, it is played inverted. So like the score, the song is played backwards, inverted. So cool. Also super cool.
That is cool. No, they wanted to make this film as legit as they could. And I like Nolan's films, like all around, like this one especially, like maybe it's because I haven't been in a theater for so long to watch a movie, felt so just, he's so crafty and he's perfected so many things. And like, just like, you know, like Nolan started this film out with just his classic entrance, like shock and awe with like the crew going in and busting up the opera house and like putting sleep gas in there and then having the double agents and all of that. Like that, what that, that's just pulling from the Batman and improving on it. And like, I hate to say that, like pulling from the Batman and he improved on it. Cause that was such a beautiful film, right? The Dark Knight. But this one was done so well. And it, I don't know, maybe, like I said, maybe I just haven't been to the theater in a long time, but like, I felt like this was just a masterpiece. And even though I know it's not perfect and, you know, if you're an average Joe type of person like me, just a common everyday moviegoer, you probably miss some things. And so I'm going to have to go back time and time again and watch it again. But this film was just, oh, so good.
We really didn't like get into deep into like the timelines and the different people's inversions and who they are and how they meet and all that kind of stuff. But if you're interested in that, check out just like these Tenet Explained videos, because like it's got stuff. Like it explains where Neil came from. Like supposedly, I mean, Casey, you talked a little bit about how like the dive was the same person as the wife, you know, in the future. Yeah. Apparently the movie alludes to Neil being that, the, what's her name? Elizabeth Debicki's character.
Katz.
Kat. So apparently the movie alludes that her son is Neil, and that the protagonist goes back and saves her from being killed by the arms dealer, and then he grows up to be Neil, and that the son's name in reverse, the first four letters is N-E-A-L, and that's why he goes by Neil in the Tenet universe. And like it goes into this whole idea that this kid grew up to be Neil, who meets George David or John David Washington in the future. And it's just like it goes into everybody's timelines and exactly where they are and what happens. And that's where I found out that Neil is in like the same space or the same time period like six times, and it's crazy. And that's what I'm saying. Like Christopher Nolan did his homework on this one, because everybody kind of like ties into each other's stories. And it's just kind of like, I didn't get any of this when I watched this movie. I didn't get any of that, but cool, you know? It's like Inception. It's like you finish Inception and you start watching all these like videos, and it's like, well, I missed that. I missed that.
The Neil thing was like surprisingly emotional, because it was almost at the very end of the movie. And when the protagonist finds out that Neil has actually known each other for years, and Neil is quite literally heading to go backwards to his death to, mm-hmm. you know, do this thing that was actually key in like getting the algorithm and saving the world. He's really sad because he just, you know, kind of started to feel this kinship with him. And even though for him, he finds out that it's just the beginning, because Neil says, you have a future in the past. You recruited me, like all these things like that. Like he says that. And so he says, for me, this is the end of like a beautiful, long friendship. And he's like, but for me, it's just the beginning. Like I was surprisingly like emotional at that part. Like, I don't know if you guys were too, but I was like, this is like, why am I like almost tearing up like at this freaking part of the movie? Like this is insane. This is like my last thing I want to say, like if I have, and it's not a nitpick, it's more just like a, hey, look, like you can tell Christopher Nolan made this movie. Like so many times when they're explaining like the upcoming action sequence or what's going on, it's literally just like shots of the characters, like walking through the streets, getting on a bus, like doing all of these things. Like if you watch like Inception or anything like that, like it's always the exact same, just like the character like in Interstellar, it was them like going through the space station, like him talking with Michael Caine about the things. And they just like, it's little by little. And they go like to different, like little set pieces that are like in the same place, but it's like, it'll be like, explain a bit here. Okay, cut to this part, explain a bit here, cut to this part, explain a bit here. Like I was just watching it today and I was like, this is so Christopher Nolan. Like it's the exact same in all his movies when they explain it, but I love it. So I will accept it 1,000,000%.
There's so many formulas that Nolan's like figured out that draw people to his work and that tell a beautiful story. And we can all agree on that. And I think if you think Christopher Nolan films suck, you suck in a lot of ways, but like that's just the reality of it. Cause like Nolan films are smart and they have a lot of thought to them, but yeah, there's so much more we could talk about. And who knows, maybe we'll do a follow-up episode at one point after each of us have watched it again, Josh for the third time, maybe fourth time, fifth time, who knows. But like guys, as always, it's fun to get together. It's fun to do a podcast with you two. I eagerly await for the world to get back right so that we can hopefully hang out in person and like chill in the new podcast studio space that we're putting up. And like, really, folks, if you've watched Tenet or you know, have some commentary that maybe we missed, like message us, let us know, hit us up on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, or, you know, just message us and communicate with us. Send us a text. My number is, just kidding, don't. But anyhow, like, we love having you. Thank you for your support. We appreciate it as always. We hope for you guys to tune in once again.